You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
For the past several weeks and maybe even over a month, the Middle East has really gotten most of the attention as it relates to war or conflict. Meanwhile, there's the conflict there and war that's going on between Russia and Ukraine. And when I think about it, I can't help but make the analogy of the biblical story of David and Goliath. And the most recent reporting is really kind of incredible about how Ukraine is becoming more innovative, more overt, more aggressive, and more successful in a lot of what they do with little or nothing as it relates to assets and resources. It's really a compelling story. Here to talk to us about that, Mark Katz, professor emeritus at George Mason University and a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Mark, I don't know if I'm misstating, overstating, or what, but I just, as I look at this story unfold each and every day, it does remind me of this biblical story. And I mean, it's amazing some of the stuff that Ukraine has been able to achieve when, for decades now, we have thought that the prowess of Russia was far greater than what they've exhibited thus far in this war, in my view.
Well, I think you're right. I think David and Goliath is the correct analogy. And I think what's fascinating is that, the Ukrainians have, just innovated tremendously with regard to how to defend themselves and how to use drones and striking deep into Russia and hurting its military and economic assets, and even regaining some of the lost territory. It is tremendous. And the Russian, essentially response is to bomb civilians and to expend even more lives on the front lines. That they don't seem to be, if they have this greater prowess, they don't seem to be using it. But the fact of the matter is, I just don't think that they are as strong as they thought they were.
The Russians seem to be fighting two fronts right now. One, the front with Ukraine, obviously, and one, this information battle relative to how they are actually, this is going to sound weird, marketing this war to their resident population. And there seems to be a lot of cracks and fissures that are appearing as more and more the public is recognizing that they're not in as good a position as the leaders of the Russian hierarchy are telling them, right?
Yeah, this war has now lasted longer than, Soviet war, 1941 to 45 against the Nazis. And, they've not done nearly as well, but they're making an awful lot of sacrifices. So I think the Russian public is unhappy. Now, that survey work that has been done indicates that the Russians sort of generally support Putin's aims as long as they themselves don't have to fight the war. But I think that what they're finding is that it involves costs for them as well, and they're not happy.
The Russians early onset were able to bring some proxies in to help fight the war. It seems as though those requests are being rejected and the numbers are shrinking. Is that true?
Yeah, I think they've gotten a lot of bad press. They've recruited, from a lot of places, from African countries, et cetera, and South Asia, Middle East, advertising, jobs in Russia, and then suddenly people find themselves in the military and not able to leave. And I think that news about this has spread. And so I think that, it's not been good for Russia at all.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Ukrainian perspective, it seems now that their strategy centers a lot around, I think, trying to embarrass Putin, right? You know, they have these huge celebrations, some of it dealing with the military, some of it with some of the successes that they've had militarily, you know, in history. And the Ukrainians seem to like to send in some drones and let them know, hey, you got this little guy over here that's nipping at your heels.
Yeah, and the latest example is this, annual St. Petersburg Economic Forum that Putin puts on, and they launched some attacks during that. You know, very embarrassing, I think, for Putin. They're pretty good at this. Of course, Zelensky himself, of course, was a showman, so I think he has a real sense of what will embarrass Putin, and I think he's being successful at this.
If you had the benefit of the crystal ball, how does this end? I mean, you know, it would seem to me that if NATO and the U.S. would release just a little more oomph, that the Ukrainians, with their abilities and what they've been able to show, their perseverance is like just unbelievable. I mean, you know, they're fighting with stones for the most part and doing it successfully. Seems as though if they had just a little bit more oomph, they could bring an end to this.
Well, you know, I would hope that would be the case, and that we would do more. But I think what's interesting about the Ukrainians is that they've done a lot of innovation themselves. You know, that mm-hmm. you know, not only are they able, have they developed some pretty impressive anti-drone systems, but now they are helping out the Gulf countries, which are being attacked by Iran with Russian assistance. And this, I think, is something that, you know, Putin wasn't counting on. I think one of the things that the Ukrainians suffered from was that the so-called Global South was just not sympathetic. They just didn't think of it as their war. But now, you know, I think that we have some pretty important, very wealthy countries turning to Ukraine because they see it as being in their interest when it comes to their own defense. They now have a greater appreciation for Ukraine. And so I think on the diplomatic front, Ukraine has done better. Now, in terms of how the war will end, you know, I personally have long thought that it's going to be a ceasefire in place, that's what we're going to see, that neither withdraws further. But I just think that so long as Vladimir Putin is in charge of Russia, he literally cannot stop, that his reputation is so much at stake that it won't be until he's out of power, I think, that then you can have a leadership that's not as invested and will be able to have a ceasefire. And I think that's what we're going to end up seeing at some point. The war will end because Putin has been overthrown.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, the territorial boundaries, excuse me, because it almost seems in some of the most recent reporting that there's a, you correct me if I'm wrong, there's even this possibility of taking back Crimea, that, you know, the Russians there are really down and out, and large sections of the Donbas as well.
You know, it is possible. Certainly, some of the pro-Ukrainian, commentators I've seen have been talking about this, and it seems like they're in a position, in a stronger position than now, to cut off Crimea from, Russian resupply, or just make it harder and harder for them to stay there. So, you know, that is possible, but that's something I think Putin will really try to resist. It is amazing that Ukraine is doing as well as it has.
What is your takeaway? You mentioned something earlier, and about diplomatically what's going on. The NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is his name, was visited Kyiv the other day. Any takeaways from that?
Well, what I just think it shows is that, you know, the Europeans understand that you know, their own defense is at stake. In other words, that if Ukraine falls, that they're going to be next, and that they're not nearly in the same, have the same capacity to resist that Ukraine does. Now, it's not a question of their, you know, being poor or anything like this. It's just that their societies are really not prepared for war, and therefore they have a real interest in helping the Ukrainians do the fighting. So, you know, I think that the Europeans are not all of them. You know, it's mixed across the continent, but certainly, you know, in terms of the Nordic states, the Baltic states, increasingly Germany, and, you know, Britain, obviously, France as well, I would say, are more interested in helping the Ukrainians. But there are others who just don't feel threatened, and just don't see that they need to do this, or else maybe it's simply that they figure somebody else is going to do it for them.
These little small intrusive activity that the Russians have gotten themselves involved in with the Baltic states, in my view, has backfired on them. I think it's really kind of solidified, as you pointed out, the Nordic states, the Baltic states, and others. It was almost like, you know, Putin was being a little cutesy, and I think he's paying the price, because I think it ultimately solidified a number of these countries diplomatically. We only have a minute. Your thoughts?
Right. I think you're right. Certainly, these states have always been afraid of Russia. And, you know, that Putin is not, I don't know what he's trying to accomplish, but for him to attack the Baltic states while the war in Ukraine is still going on would be silly.
Yeah, it's just kind of, I scratch my head on a lot of what's going on strategically from their side. I don't get it, but I'm almost glad he's doing it, because it seems to be working against him in a big way and coalescing the other side. So we'll see. With Mark Katz, Professor Emeritus at George Mason University and a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, thank you so much for your time and your insight. We truly appreciate it.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.